You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I spent a good part of my weekend being really, really angry about the representation of sexual minorities in contemporary film. We watched this new thriller over the weekend about a woman who basically kidnaps elderly people by gaming the legal guardianship system and then holds these elderly people against their will in a crappy long-term care facility. She prevents them from seeing their families. She strips them of their assets, condemns them to lonely and miserable deaths. Clearly, it's not just Britney who needs to be freed, people. And the lead in this film, the villain, is a lesbian with a severe haircut and a thing for expensive stiletto heels. Her girlfriend is her accomplice. And between them, they don't have a scrap of a scruple. No conscience, no remorse about what they're doing. They are sociopaths. Two greedy fucking dykes who don't care who they hurt or how many lives they destroy. They're monstrous. And I loved it. I fucking loved it. It's called I Care a Lot. It's streaming on Netflix. Directed by Jay Blakeson. It stars Rosamund Pike and Isa Gonzalez as the horrible lesbians. Peter Dinklage is in it. He's amazing. And two-time Academy Award winner Diane Wiest is in it, one of my favorite actresses. She won both those awards for roles in Woody Allen films. I don't know if she's supposed to return them now or what, but I love her, and she's amazing in everything. And I hope she gets another Academy Award for this performance, one that won't have the stank of Woody Allen all over it. Again, this film is called I Care a Lot. Streaming on Netflix, definitely worth your time. All right, what was I saying when I started? Oh, right. I spent a good part of my weekend really angry about the representation of sexual minorities in contemporary film. But it wasn't the movie about the evil lesbian couple that pissed me off. Actually, I don't know if Marla and Fran, that's the evil couple in this movie. I don't know what their relationship histories are or even how they identify. So they could be evil bisexuals. Don't want to accidentally do some of that bisexual erasure thing here. But this film is proof of how far we've come since Basic Instinct, the 1992 thriller starring Michael Douglas and Sharon Stone about a sociopathic lesbian murderer, or possibly bisexual murderer, a film that led to street protests. The shoot was disrupted. The premiere was picketed by angry lesbians and bisexual women. And there have been no protests, none that I'm aware of I Care a Lot with its evil lesbian and or bisexual leads. And I think that's because we've reached a place where those of us who are queer, gay, bisexual, lesbian, trans, see ourselves represented in film and in television in our full diversity and complexity. When there were fewer portrayals of us on film or on television, each single portrayal was scrutinized closely because it might be the only lesbian or gay man or bisexual person or the only trans person that that viewer of that film or TV show might ever meet. And if every queer person the general public saw on TV or in movies was a murderer, and that's pretty much how it went for decades, that shaped how people felt about their gay or lesbian family members or neighbors or employees. It had consequences for us. But now we've got actual lesbians who are just themselves on TV. We've got our Rachels and our Ellens, and enough fictional portrayals of gays and lesbians and bisexuals and same-sex couples in film and on television that we can relax about the occasional lesbian sociopath serial killer couple or bisexual sociopath serial killer couple. We see you, bisociopaths. You are valid. We can relax about a lesbian sociopath in a film because that one part, that one character is balanced out by all the lesbian moms on the Fosters and the gay ballet dancers on Tiny Pretty Things and the boys in space on Star Trek Picard. Okay, so there was this movie that pissed me off this weekend, and it wasn't that one. It wasn't the one I just talked about. There Is No I in Threesome. It's a documentary about an opposite-sex couple, both partners identify as bisexual, in an open relationship that becomes a poly relationship, that becomes a messy relationship, that becomes a failed relationship. Before I even pressed play, the title bothered me. There Is No I in Threesome? What the fuck is that supposed to mean? Of course there's an I in Threesome. No letter I in Threesome, duh. But in every threesome, there are three individuals whose needs, desires, and feelings have to be balanced, and who would obviously use the first person singular nominative case personal pronoun I when referring to themselves, when making those very important I statements before the threesome could even get started. There is no I in threesome. Okay, documentary about a couple exploring polyamory. They use the word monogamous. They use my word in the first 10 minutes. And the star of the film, who's also the filmmaker, repeatedly describes openness, opening the relationship, as having your cake and eating it too. They establish rules and immediately break them. She catches feelings for someone else. And after 90 interminable minutes, we're told, we're informed that you can't actually have your cake and eat it too. Meaning you can have commitment and stability, or you can have variety and novelty, but you can't have both. Love, we learn from the most prominent film about polyamory and open relationships to roll out in years. Love, this film tells us, is a zero-sum game. Can't be in love with more than one person romantically at a time, and if you attempt it, you will literally fall on your face over and over. Which is how the film ends, with the lead, the star, the filmmaker, Mr. Having and Eating Cake, literally falling on his face over and over and over again. That is the takeaway, and it pissed me off. As a member of this community, I was really pissed. Now, I'm not suggesting that all portrayals of poly, open, or monogamous relationships have to be positive, just as I'm not suggesting that lesbian characters can't be immoral sociopaths or bisexual characters, but just as it was a problem when all lesbian, gay, and bi characters and trans characters were immoral sociopaths or serial killers, it is a problem right now that all portrayals of open or poly couples on television or in film are so cringe and always failures. I'm not impugning the motives of the filmmaker here. They were documenting their journey into polyamory and couldn't know at the start that it would end in shit. But it's telling that this film, this portrait, got a big splashy rollout on HBO Max. And I think that's because it tells monogamous people what they want to hear about people who aren't monogamous, in the same way Basic Instinct told heterosexual people what they wanted to hear about lesbians in 1992. What it says to monogamous people, this film, is that you're doing it right, and all those polyamorous people or people in open relationships, they're doing it wrong. What it says to monogamous people is your relationship might succeed, but their relationships, doomed to certain failure. This is a film about polyamory pitched right at the prejudices of the monogamous folks out there, the prejudices of the dominant group. I don't think there should be protests, even though I was pissed off all weekend. Poly people can't exactly picket screenings when the film is streaming in people's homes. But like the lesbians who protested, picketed Basic Instinct back in 1992, I am sick and tired of being portrayed in this way. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and joining us on the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. Twice as much show, more guests, no ads on the magnum. New York Times journalist and columnist Charles M. Blow is here to talk about his new book, The Devil You Know, A Black Power Manifesto. That's on the magnum. Lots coming up on the micro too, all on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Calm, the number one app for meditation and sleep. For a limited time, my listeners get 40% off a Calm premium subscription by going to calm.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by omgyes.com, a website devoted to women's pleasure. Check it out and get a discount when you go to omgyes.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Talkspace, online therapy that makes it easy to get extra mental health support. For $100 off your first month, go to Talkspace.com and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan. I'm calling with a sexy little sex success story. I really get off to the sounds of getting off, panting, moaning, wet sounds, etc. When I touch myself, I love listening to Sounds of Pleasure on Tumblr, which has clips submitted under alias of people pleasuring themselves or others. One time I actually came just listening to a clip with no physical stimulation except for the gentle rumble of the seat of a car, but that's a story for another time. Anyway, I recently recorded an audio clip of me touching myself, using my vibrator and actually moving through a pretty amazing orgasm. Knowing that I was being recorded and that hundreds of people would be listening to me come was so hot and made me climax that much harder. I submitted it under an alias that I've always secretly loved, but never used before. It was posted a few days later, and I saw my clip posted with all the other glorious orgasms happening all over the world. I clicked on it, I listened to myself come, and I came. It was very meta. Yeah, anyway, the whole process, start to finish, was very sexy and really brought the big O full circle. I think I might create one or two more little contributions under this newly found identity. And I guess as a suggestion to your listeners, if porn isn't really your thing, or if you're wanting to mix up the ways that you get a little riled up, try listening to audio clips. Audio clips of genuine orgasms submitted by willing and consenting adults. Orgasms.
Thank you so much for calling in and sharing your success story. The Sounds of Pleasure on Tumblr. I am going to check that out. We like to start the show each week with something or someone that's working for one of our listeners before we get to what isn't working for our listeners. So if you have a success story that you want to share, send it in. Details about how to send it in at the end of the show.
Hi, Dan. I have a question about like an etiquette situation that I'm curious about. I have run into a situation I haven't encountered before, and it's that I have been going on a few like walk around like internet dates with people, and I started like seeing one person and feeling like kind of like interested in them, and I went on a date with another person who eventually came back to my house, and I was feeling like not like they're a nice person and we get along great and stuff, but I'm just like not really feeling it with them. But she and my roommate, who is a longtime friend of mine, really hit it off really well. And like, we both felt like there were serious vibes between them. And I sort of want to just like say something to her, like, you're great and stuff, but I'm not like super feeling it, but you and my friend should like hang out basically. But I don't know if that's weird or if there's like a best way to go about that. Sort of just curious about your perspective.
It is weird what you're thinking about doing, fixing up this woman that you've been seeing with your roommate because you're not feeling it for her. They were clearly vibing the one time that they, I hope, safely unmasked, hung out together. It is weird, but it shouldn't be weird. And wouldn't it be great if it wasn't weird? Oddly enough, listening to your call, I was thinking about Miracle on 34th Street. And when Macy's didn't have the right roller skates, they referred a customer to Gimbel's and it generated all sorts of goodwill. It would be like that, but for dates, not roller skates. The issue for this woman is that it sounds like you and your roommate have talked about the fact that he clicked with her and is interested in her, and you're comfortable with that, and he's comfortable with that. You don't know for sure how she's feeling, whether the vibe was a romantic vibe that she had with your roommate, or maybe she just clicked with him in a friendly way, or maybe she's being friendly with him because she's interested in you, and he's your roommate and your friend, and she wanted to make a good impression on you, and so she leaned into it with him. But you don't know how she's feeling. And the danger here is when you call her to say, I'm not interested in you. We've hung out a little bit now and I've gotten to know you. And what I now know for sure is I am not interested in you in the way I thought I might be when we first met. That's a rejection. And if she's not on the same page, if hearing that from you doesn't make her feel like she's been let off a hook potentially, it could hurt. And she may react badly to you then attempting this lateral pass, sending her off to your roommate. But, you know, if you felt like they clicked and he felt like they clicked, maybe the safe, high emotional IQ thing to do is just to tell her that you're not interested and thank her for her time and not say anything to her about her roommate, and then let your roommate circle back with her after a couple of weeks. And who knows, if she's forthright or a listener of the Savage Lumpcast, maybe she felt the same way about your roommate, felt the same way about you that you felt about her, not into it with you, totally interested in your roommate, and will call him herself before those 2 weeks are up. Wish we lived in a world where this was more common. And I actually did something like this once. I met a guy, we had sex. His kink portfolio, his kink bouquet wasn't exactly my kink bouquet portfolio, but I had a friend that I'd also hooked up with a few times, and I knew that they were kind of perfect for each other. And I let them both know that, and they were grateful for the referral. Maybe this woman will be grateful for the referral. Maybe the referral and whatever she might have with your roommate will take the sting off the implicit rejection that you're handing her. But there's only one way to find out, and that's to make the referral. That's the riskier route. You could, of course, again, go the tell her you're not interested, thank her for her time route, and encourage your roommate to get in touch with her himself after she's had time to process the devastating loss of a future with you. Keep it together, people. There is a lot to stress us all out right now, and getting a good night's sleep is one of the best ways to manage your mental health, and that's why I'm delighted that Calm is sponsoring the show. Calm is the app designed to help you ease stress and get the best sleep of your life. Calm has a whole library of programs designed for healthy sleep, like soundscapes, guided meditations, and over 100 sleep stories narrated by soothing voices like Kelly Rowland, Laura Dern, and LeBron James. Over 85 million people around the world are already using Calm to take care of their minds and to get themselves better sleep. Join them. Get the Calm app and experience a transformation in the way you sleep. For listeners of our show, Calm is offering a special limited time promotion of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/savage. That's 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library, and new content is added every week. Let them know the Lovecast sent you by getting started today at calm.com/savage. That's calm.com/savage.
Hey, Dan, I'm calling today to get your take on how I can get over something. You know, some background. I was sleeping with someone for a while. You know, the sex was really good and, you know, wasn't a love connection or anything like that, but it was fun while it lasted. And I knew it wasn't meant to be forever. So when he ended it and, you know, gave me the "it's not you, it's me" and other platitude spiel, I was fine with it and, you know, kind of let it roll off my back. And we parted ways as friends, if not friends with benefits. But now there's a problem because I've since learned that he said all those things and he broke it off because he started sleeping with and subsequently dating one of my really close friends. And I'm pissed about it. I don't necessarily feel mad at her. She didn't know that we were sleeping together at the time. They're coworkers, so I didn't feel like it was appropriate to rock the boat, and I kind of kept her out of the loop on what was happening. But now it feels like there's this invisible rift between me and my friend. And I don't know. I was blindsided when she told me about it, you know, them starting to see each other. I feel like I got retroactively played, and I'm angry, but I don't want to be. I want to get over this, and I want to be able to spend time with my friend again without being so annoyed and without her not understanding why I'm annoyed. I don't think I can talk to her about it because I don't want to ruin things between them or punish her because he was an ass. But I just don't know what to do. And so I would love your advice. If you know of any mantra I can repeat to myself to speed up the clock and be over it, I would really appreciate it.
All right. My take. You were fucking this guy and the sex was really great, but you weren't into him. You weren't romantically interested in him. There was no long-term prospect there. It was, as you say, as you frame it after the fact, a kind of friends with benefits situation. And he ended it and he gave you all the little white lies, the comforting little white lies that I think people ought to give. It's not you, it's me. It's you. It's not them, it's you. But who wants to hear that? You want that person who's dumping you or ending things, if it wasn't a relationship, just an arrangement, to demonstrate some, I don't know, at least ritualistic consideration and for your feelings. And one of the ways that we do that as we end something is to trot out those platitudes, like "it's not you, it's me," when it's very clearly you, not me. And it turns out, you found out after he ended it, that he ended it because he was sleeping with this other woman who coincidentally happens to be a friend of yours. And you're angry about this. And I think you're a little angrier than you – I don't want to say you have a right to be. You have a right to feel your feelings. But it's not as if this guy met your friend through you while he was sleeping with you and started sleeping with her and kept you in the dark about that. They have a relationship. They are coworkers. They have a relationship, a connection, something that brought them into each other's orbit that predates you and this guy starting to fuck each other. they were coworkers. Maybe there had always been something there, a little attraction buzz that they had ignored. They didn't want to complicate their work relationship. And he was seeking sex elsewhere, but then they couldn't deny whatever it was they had, and they started having sex together. And it was awkward for him. He didn't know how to go to you and say, okay, I've started this thing. And it wasn't an exclusive relationship. It was friends with benefits. You were presumably free to sleep with other guys. Maybe you did sleep with other guys, or you were open to pursuing something with another guy if another guy came along that you were more interested in romantically and sexually than you were interested in this guy who was briefly and temporarily meeting your sexual needs. So in a way, and I think you know this, you're asking me to help you get over this because I think you know it's slightly irrational. And what would the other option have been? What should they have done? Should they have, because you and he had this connection and it was always going to be temporary and it's just about the sex, should they have never hooked up? Should they have taken a sort of dual site-specific vow of celibacy just about each other for all eternity because you and this guy were hooking up for a while and only for a while, with the understanding every time you hooked up that it might be the last time because it was just about the sex and not about anything else? Of course not. So what's the mantra? Well, I think the mantra right now is you telling yourself when you feel angry that it's awkward. This guy that you were fucking is now with a friend, and that's awkward, and you're going to always have like slightly awkward feelings about it, and that's okay. Of course, you're allowed to feel angry, but I don't think you have a right to feel angry. You have a right to feel supremely awkward about how this played out. And now that you know that what was going on behind the it's not you, it's me, maybe there's information he could have shared with you at that moment, additional information about his interest in this person. And maybe he should have ended things with you before he began having sex with this woman. Maybe that would have been a way for him to show that kind of consideration for your feelings that you were owed, considering, you know, even if there was no long-term romantic interest, there was certainly a rapport and a sexual interest, and you would like to be treated kindly by people who get to put their penis in your vagina. That's not irrational. So maybe you express that anger to him a little bit and then make a conscious decision to let it go and to put yourself in their shoes. If there was something there that wasn't just about sex between them, that was potentially something more, if you were the friend, the coworker in that situation, wouldn't you do what they've done? Wouldn't you have pursued it even if it was awkward, even if it caused someone else some pain in how it all tumbled out, how the news all tumbled out in the end? Probably. The course of true love ne'er did run smooth. And it sucks to be the bump in somebody else's road toward true love. But we all have to play that part every once in a while. You got to play this part now. Feel your feelings, have your anger, say your piece, then make a conscious decision to let it go. And I know that that mantra is a little played out because of that Disney movie, but you can just say to yourself, let it go, let it go, let it go. And you can remind yourself after saying, let it go, let it go, let it go, that your anger is a little irrational because these two people who are into each other couldn't be expected to never act on that for all eternity because you got to his dick first and you were her friend first. And maybe it would help with your anger, help you get past it, if you could say to them both, if you could all get together and say, look, I'm happy for you guys. But you could have told me, turning to him, you could have told me instead of letting it tumble out. I didn't appreciate being blindsided. You could have told me. And then maybe he'll apologize to you sincerely in front of his new girlfriend, and that'll help. That'll help you let it go. This pandemic has really challenged everyone's mental health. Some of us are juggling childcare with working full-time in our homes. Some of us are fighting with our partners more than usual. And on top of that, many of us are encountering unexpected job changes and challenges. It's a lot to handle. It would be a lot to handle under normal circumstances, but it's especially grueling during a pandemic. All of this leads to crushing amounts of stress, which is why it's a great idea to talk to a Talkspace therapist. Talkspace has thousands of licensed therapists trained in over 40 specialties, including anxiety, depression, relationships, LGBTQ issues, and more. Your therapist can help you set and achieve your goals. You'll be amazed at how much progress you make each week that you attend therapy. And Talkspace is affordable at a fraction of the cost of in-person therapy. Instead of waiting for an appointment, you can send unlimited messages to your therapist 24/7, and they will engage with you daily, 5 days a week. Change your life for the better. We all need someone to talk to. You need someone to talk to. You deserve to get the support you need, and you can get that support with Talkspace. As a listener of this podcast, you'll get $100 off your first month with Talkspace. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com or download the app. Make sure to use the code SAVAGE to get $100 off your first month and show your support for the show. Go to Talkspace.com and use the code SAVAGE. That's Talkspace.com, promo code SAVAGE for $100 off your first month.
Hello, Dan. A few months ago, I contracted chlamydia, and I did all the responsible things that, you know, I could think of to do. I let anybody know who could have contracted it. I got my tests and medication and follow-up tests, and I'm totally clear now. But what I'm trying to figure out is if I have an obligation to tell my future partners that I once had chlamydia.
No, you are not obligated to tell all of your future partners that you once had a curable sexually transmitted infection that you took care of and that you've been cured of and that they are not at risk of contracting from you. The answer is no.
Hey there, Dan and team. I just listened to the most recent episode where you gave such sage advice to the lesbian who had really disturbed her girlfriend when she was rooming her. And it made me think of something that happens to me that I've always wondered about. And it's like when I am fucking a guy and very often getting beat, and then the guy will kind of hop off and will suck my cock. And I've always wondered, is that fecal-free? You know, I know the guys that this has happened with, you know, deep clean really well and everything's seems squeaky clean after, but I've just kind of wondered and been a little bit wary about kissing them after, just because of that whole, are there microscopic fecal matter bits in there or what?
You can't get a dick in your mouth without getting your nose down by that dick first. These guys, these bottoms who clean themselves out before you fuck them, and fuck them deep. If they want to suck your dick after you pull it out of their ass, let them. If there's a problem, if it's not clean, you may notice. They may certainly notice before they suck your dick. And then you can pivot to the shower or grab the cum towel or whatever. But I guarantee you that 99.999999% of bottoms who will suck a dick after it comes out of their ass are not going to suck a dick that comes out of their ass with any perceptible fecal matter on it, with any noticeable through the visuals or noticeable through the scent fecal matter on that dick. It's not going to go in his mouth. Are there trace amounts of fecal matter? Yeah. But you know what? Science has shown us there's pretty much trace amounts of fecal matter on everything. What's mostly on a guy's dick after he pulls it out of a squeaky clean, well-prepped, well-douched ass after even aggressive, passionate, deep, balls-deep anal, what's mostly or almost entirely on that guy's dick is lube and rectal mucus. And rectal mucus, I know, sounds gross, kind of a PR problem with that rectal before mucus. Actually, mucus isn't a great word either. But when you give somebody an aggressive, sloppy, wet blowjob, what's all over the dick when it comes out of your mouth or your throat? Mucus. And everyone's fine with that. Rectal mucus, pretty much the same stuff. So, not pleasant to think about afterwards to unpack it and diagram it, a little squicky, but in the moment, in that passionate moment, people do that. ATM, ass to mouth. Another one of those things that perhaps porn popularized or normalized. The risks are low for the bottom. Of course, they are not non-existent. The risk for hepatitis, for E. coli. But if he's been down between your legs and sucking your dick, he's probably already been exposed to a little bit of your fecal matter anyway. And the risk for you kissing that guy after he sucks your dick, the risks for you presented by whatever is in your GI tract already, I'd say non-existent and not something that you need to worry about. So long as the dick comes out clean, and if the guy is putting your dick in his mouth after it's been in his ass, that is a good sign that the dick indeed did come out clean. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by OMGYes.com, a website devoted to women's sexual pleasure. In partnership with Indiana University and Kinsey Institute researchers, OMGYes has interviewed and surveyed thousands of women about what's made their pleasure better, physical techniques, the psychological techniques, and ways of guiding their partners so that they can experience pleasure or more pleasure during sex. The findings are peer-reviewed and published. This is science. They are doing data. They're not just winging it. And all of this research and data and science is brought to life in fun, honest videos featuring regular women sharing stories from their own experiences about what works for them and what might work for you. I've watched a bunch of these videos. They're really great. I think they're really valuable. I think they're a tremendous resource, and I think you should check them out. One of the things their research has found is how easy it is for us to blunt or cut off our own explorations when we think things like, I've already got techniques that work for me, I'm good. But finding out what works for other people can help you find new things, bonus things, additional things that work for you. Indiana University School of Medicine researchers actually did a study giving OMG Yes to 1,000 women and their partners. 96% realized there's actually more room in their lives for sexual pleasure, more room for growth. OMG Yes is not a subscription. Each batch of content is a one-time payment, like buying a book, that you keep and own forever, and your contribution goes on to fund future pleasure research at IU and the Kinsey Institute. Learn more about the study at omgyes.com. And our listeners get a discount at omgyes.com/savage. Do yourself a favor. Do us a favor. Support the Lovecast by going to omgyes.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. This is a 45-year-old female living in a small town in Ontario, Canada. I'm seeing a guy and we're in a friends with benefits kind of situation. He has a super high sex drive and is a kinkster. I'm not, but I'm trying to keep an open mind and just be open to trying new things, which I have. We have tried some bondage and some ball play with him, squeezing, tying them up. Tried pegging the last time he was here. It unfortunately didn't work because the strap-on dildo that he bought was too big, 10-inch, way too big, and was not able to handle it. So we're going to try something smaller the next time that I see him. And I'm totally fine with that. I'm open to it. It's exciting to me. My problem is he wants to talk about it and text about it constantly, and that's all it is. And he's super obsessed with cock, like super obsessed. He is bisexual, hasn't had an experience yet, but definitely wants me to be a part of it. So we're looking at maybe doing a threesome. I'm really nervous about it because I'm open-minded to it, and I want him to have the experience. I just don't know how I feel about it. Part of me gets kind of wigged out by it, and part of me is excited by it, and I just don't know how to move forward with that. So as far as he's concerned, you know, we're going to move forward. It might be something we do, and I'm thinking, well, you might do it once and that would probably be it for me, but I'm really nervous about it, and I'm really getting turned off of the incessant talking about, like, just all of it. It's all focused on what is good for him. I have a drawer in my house full of toys for him. He's bought a pump now, like a cock pump. He's got a butt plug. He's got two dildos, and there's nothing for me. Like nothing. Like the last time I saw him, I had one orgasm. One. And I'm just like, what the hell? This is supposed to be mutual. So I'm just getting kind of turned off by it, and I don't know what to do. I don't know if maybe we're just on different pages and it's not going to work, or how do I say to him, like, hey buddy, this isn't all just about you, and I'm kind of sick of the incessant talking about it all being about you.
You have my permission to dump the selfish lover, the inconsiderate asshole. Well, asshole may be a little too much, but he's definitely inconsiderate. He's showing up at your place with all these toys for his own hole and for his own dick, and not showing up at your place with any toys for you, or asking you what toys that you already have that you might like used on you when he's around. He's not taking your pleasure into consideration. And he's also not taking your time into consideration if he's constantly blowing up your phones with dirty talk. He's really excited about being with someone. He thinks he's with somebody. He's not with somebody anymore because you're going to break up with him. He's really excited about being with someone who's into his kinks, but he's driving you, that person, away by obsessing about them, about not talking with you about anything else. And then when he shows up to have sex with you, not making sure that it's as pleasurable for you and you're getting as much out of it as he's getting. You're in the power position here. A girlfriend who is willing to peg you, a girlfriend who's into the fact that you are bi and would like to have a three-way with you where some other dude is going to shove his dick in your mouth or fuck your ass. That girlfriend isn't easy to find, and he should take care to make sure that he's meeting your needs so that you can stick around, or that you want to stick around and continue to meet his needs. And he's not doing that because, I don't know, because he doesn't know that he has to, perhaps because you haven't told him that you have expectations and that you have limits, including a limit to the number of texts you want to read from him on any given day about his hunger for cock and his obsession with cock. Could be that he's just never had this in his life before. And he's a little too excited and a little too spun up, and that he doesn't know and may not know, because it doesn't sound like you've told him, that he's annoying the shit out of you and is very likely going to drive you away if he can't rein it in and if he can't center your pleasure in the same way and to the same degree that you have centered his. My advice would be to end it. Sounds like that's what you want to do, and I'm giving you permission to do what you want to do. When you tell him why you're ending it, and I don't think in this case that you should go with platitudes. I don't think you should, it's not you, it's me, him. I don't have time for a relationship right now. Don't do that. Tell him why. Tell him it's exhausting. You're exhausted. You feel used. You feel like dick matters more to him than you do, and that you're not getting as much out of it pleasure-wise as he is. And it doesn't feel fair, mutual. There's no recip here. Where's the reciprocation? Where's the consideration? Tell him all that and dump him. Maybe he'll be a better partner the next time he finds a woman like you who can go to all the places that he wants to go, and he'll demonstrate more consideration because he'll know, because he got burned last time for not doing those things, that he's got to do those things going forward. Or maybe he'll stumble into the life of a woman who is as obsessed with her boyfriend being obsessed with dick as he's obsessed with dick, and he'll luck out. Or maybe he'll talk you into continuing to see him on the condition that he do better. And if he does better and you're into it, you do sound like you're a little into the idea of seeing your boyfriend suck a dick. If he does better and you're still into it and he course corrects, maybe you can keep seeing him. But I don't think that he's going to course correct, that he's going to realize the degree to which he needs to course correct without at the very least being dumped by you. Doesn't mean you can't take him back. But he needs to go through the being dumped before he can become the kind of guy you want to be with at all, much less considered taken back.
Hi, Dan. I'm a mid-30s bi lady from the South. And my wife and I went out and made friends with a couple. We clicked right away, talked for hours, organically happened. And we hung out the next weekend. Again, just really enjoyed their company. And we really liked them. We really get along with them. We did Google search the husband because he's a musician, and we found out that he was accused of molesting one of his teenage students. So we decided we aren't going to continue to communicate with these people. We haven't made solid plans to continue hanging out with them, but they have our number. They do reach out to us, but we aren't really sure if they do reach out again to hang out, how to handle the situation. We can't decide if we should ghost them or confront them and, you know, say like, listen, we enjoyed your company, but we just can't unfortunately accept this part of your life and continue our friendship. So
again, we're just not sure if we should ghost or maybe confront the situation and kind of end things solidly. But I don't agree with ghosting. I don't think it's a nice thing to do, whether it's to friends or dating. But we really just can't decide. And we really like these folks. And it's just too bad we can't continue a friendship.
You roll out two options here: to ghost this couple, to ghost on them, or to confront them about what you found when you Googled the husband. There's also the slowly withdraw option, which is when they reach out to you and they say they want to get together, you say you're busy right now or too busy right now, you're just unavailable. You make yourselves unavailable to them. They will get the message. They will stop reaching out to you. They will probably assume, given what you found so easily on Google, that you stumbled over that or went looking for that, and you now know, and they'll stop bothering you. They'll stop reaching out to you. I don't necessarily think that's the coward's way out, that kind of conflict avoidance strategy in a case like this. There's only so much conflict each of us can handle. And a confrontation invites a conflict. It is a conflict. And if you decide that this isn't conflict that you can handle right now or want to add to the pile of conflicts and confrontations that are already on your menu, already in your life, I think that can be a legitimate choice. You aren't obligated to confront. You aren't obligated to invite that kind of conflict. And if you don't want to be the kind of person who ghosts, then you can be the kind of person who slowly withdraws, the kind of person, the kind of couple that just suddenly isn't as available as they once were. They'll figure it out. They will probably know exactly what happened, exactly what you found out, and they will stop reaching out to you.
Hey, Dan, longtime listener from the Southwest. I'm a heterosexual male, and I was calling because my fiance has been looking at becoming a sugar baby for a while. She's gone on a few dates and stuff, and that's totally fine with me, but the part that always bothers me is whenever, you know, they end up asking for sex, and we all know that's basically what they're after. And, like, it just feels really weird and wrong to me, and I've somehow always managed to, like, stop her because we talk about it. But then, like, we've also talked about being polyamorous and, like, trading, like, wife swapping and stuff. And, like, to me, that seems okay, but there's just something weird that I don't know how to explain it. It just bothers me about this. Maybe it's just because it's transactional and I'm not a part of it. Whereas, like, if we were wife swapping, then, like, we're all kind of involved. And I was wondering, like, how do you, like, help get over this and, you know, overcome it? Maybe I'm just, like, scared because I might lose her, even though I know I won't. Because at the end of the day, it's just a transaction. There's no emotions and stuff. And, like, we're in the pandemic and, you know, if someone wants to take her out and get to third or fourth base, pay all my bills for the month, like, why can't I encourage that and just, you know, make our lives easier?
So it's not your girlfriend having sex with somebody else that's the hang up for you. You say you would be fine with being in a poly relationship. You say you would be fine with swinging, wife swapping, swinging. And so the idea of your girlfriend getting pleasure from another man, having a positive sexual interaction with another man, that turns you on. It's the addition of the sugar baby thing, of the money that she would basically be doing a kind of sex work. And you wonder, like, what's in that for you? If it was poly, you would get to have sex with other people too. If it was swinging, you would get to be with the girlfriend or wife of the other couple that you and your girlfriend were swinging with. There would be some sexual benefit, some upside for you sexually. You would get off too. And what your girlfriend is proposing here is something where not about you, and you're not going to be getting off. She's going to be having transactional sex with other men in a sugar baby arrangement. And sugar babies are kind of sex workers with, theoretically and most commonly is understood, one client. And he showers her with money and gifts, and in addition to the sex, she provides him with attention. She does emotional labor. He can suspend his disbelief, the sugar daddy, and believe he's having a GFE, they used to call it, a girlfriend experience with this woman who's only there for the money, but not just there for the money. Most people I know who've had sugar baby arrangements had them with guys they could tolerate, even guys they liked. We've had some calls over the years from people who wound up in relationships with a person they originally had a sugar baby arrangement with, and so they kind of fell in love. Most people I know who do this kind of thing who are capable of doing this kind of thing is not going to be with somebody that they could take or leave. Because if you're in a sugar baby arrangement and it's ongoing, that's a lot of FaceTime and a lot of fuck time and a lot of emotional labor. So you can't really do that with somebody who you find repulsive. Maybe that's what threatens you about it. The prospect of this being an ongoing connection, not an open relationship where you occasionally both sleep with other people, not swinging where you get together with a couple and then you go your separate ways, but she's going to be in a relationship with someone else, commodified transactional relationship with someone else. And there is a benefit for you. Your bills will get paid. The rent will get paid. Do you have hangups there about the provider shit that, you know, being less of a man because she needs some other man to pay her rent? That's something to think about, something to unpack. And it's kind of interesting that you never mentioned how your girlfriend feels about this or feels about your role in this. Is this something that she's given you veto power over? Is this something she's only going to do if you're comfortable with it and isn't going to do if you aren't comfortable with it? Do your feelings matter? Now, when you're with someone, you want your feelings to matter. Even if she ultimately decides that this is something that she has to do to survive and for both of you to survive, she may have to set your feelings aside, or your feelings may not carry the day. But at least if you've had a conversation about your feelings, just knowing that she's taking your feelings into consideration, even if ultimately things don't go the way you would like it to go, make you feel heard, can make you feel more comfortable about your girlfriend doing this, becoming a sugar baby, having an ongoing solo sex work transactional relationship with one guy. That's a conversation you need to have with your girlfriend, not your sex advice podcaster. You need to have that conversation with her and see where it goes. And look for signs that she's taking your feelings into consideration, with the understanding that your girlfriend, a free and autonomous individual, can make a decision, make her own decision in the end, that she gets to make her own decision about her body and about what she's going to do with it and about whether she's going to do this kind of thing with it. And then you get to make a decision about your own body. If she decides that she is going to do this and you aren't comfortable staying in this relationship and having your rent paid in this way, you are free to walk your body out of this relationship. All right, before we get to response calls, before listeners tell me what I could have said and should have said, let's read some tweets. Anna Cronism tweets, the woman on the Savage Lovecast asking if she should be worried that a little bit of pot makes her horny. Anna added the emoji of Obama in a wingback chair, shrugging like, what's the problem here? And I just want to say, I agree with Obama. No problem there. Jenny Fuchsia tweets, regarding the woman who wanted to explain her reasoning for ending things, abusers often make their partners feel like they need to present a strong case for anything that might upset their abuser. Somehow breaking up with someone requires a two-thirds majority. I don't think this is about the caller wanting to get the last word, Dan. I think it's a history of being forced to explain. That's a good point that allows me to reemphasize a point I have made before. You don't have to win an argument to end a relationship. And finally, Pasha tweets, the increasing ubiquity of dicks might be the perfect band name. I have a feeling that just as the Doors of Perception eventually became The Doors, the increasing ubiquity of dicks would eventually become The Dicks, which actually also isn't a bad name for a band. Thanks to everyone who posted about the show on your social media this week. And if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the Savage Lovecast hashtag. And now your response calls.
Hey, Dan, calling with an infidelity survival story. My husband cheated on me about 4 years into our marriage and about 10 years into our relationship. It was an emotional affair with a coworker that also became physical, and it completely rocked our world. We almost ended it completely, but we got into therapy and really dug into some of the unspoken issues that had been leaving both of us pretty miserable long before the affair. Therapy, finally being honest with each other, and being transparent about what we were going through with our family and friends gave us the tools and support that we needed to push through. Today, we are still married, we've got a couple kids, and we are absolutely better than ever. I really feel like I've had two marriages. The first was pretty awful, and the second is pretty wonderful. They just happen to be with the same guy.
Hi, I'm calling in response to episode 747 with the caller who'd asked about her guilt and wondering if she should explain her reasoning for breaking up with the person she'd been dating. From an outside perspective, I can see how it would be confusing about why she might feel guilty. But the caller had identified that she had some past history of emotional abuse in a relationship. So I just wanted to put forth the idea that this guilt might not be based in wanting the last word. For those of us who have experienced emotional abuse, it's often the case that at some point in our lives, we've been taught through relationships that our feelings and intuition and experiences don't matter, or that we can't trust them, and that standing up to the abusive person or just doing what's right for ourselves is then thrown back at us as blame for hurting the abusive person. So this really leads to confusion and intense self-doubt, and being entrenched in that kind of cycle is one reason why it can be so difficult to leave abusive relationships. I just wanted to let the caller know that if this is what's going on, there are others who understand how hard it is to get out of that dynamic. And it's a sign of your strength that you are recognizing the patterns of the past and starting to trust your own judgment and feelings and to remove yourself from the situations when your boundaries aren't respected, even if it's uncomfortable for you to do so. Dan's right that you definitely don't owe her an explanation. It sounds like you really did the best thing for yourself. And with time, it will feel easier to maintain your boundaries when you're in a relationship without feeling guilty about it.
Hey, Dan. I'm calling about the woman who was looking for advice as to how she could meet bisexual men on online dating apps. And I want to tell you that your advice was spot on. About 20 years ago in Internet 1.0 dating website time, I met a woman who put in her ad that she had been in a long-term relationship with a bisexual guy. She was open to dating straight men and bisexual men. And I answered that ad, although at the time I thought I was just a straight guy who liked pegging on occasion. And we are together 20 years later with a family and a very wonderful relationship. And we are now both out as bisexuals. There are a lot more guys out there than she probably expects who would love to see that in a dating profile.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for me or a comment about this week's show? There are two ways to get them to us. You can call us at 206-302-2064, or you can use the voice memo app on your phone to record your question or comment and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. On March 13th, we're doing an all-new Savage Lovecast live stream with my special guest, writer and pro dominatrix, Mistress Matisse. You can send your BDSM questions ahead of time to livestream@savagelovecast.com, or just show up for the show and ask your questions during the show, and we will answer as many as we can while we're doing the show. Go to savagelovecast.com/events to get tickets now. And there are a handful of Hump 2021 shows left, with two shows this weekend and two more special viewing parties. There is an all-nude viewing party on Saturday night and a Hump filmmaker and performer viewing party on Sunday. Head over to humpfilmfest.com to choose a showtime or viewing party that works for you. Follow me on Twitter @FakeDanSavage. Follow Charles M. Blow on Twitter @CharlesMBlow. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian, and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll be back at you next week for an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.